This episode of the Mark Divine Show is sponsored by Athletic Greens, or AG1. I love AG1. I've been using it for a few years now. I think it's one of the best supplements on the market. I'm not alone. There's a ton of influencers and top athletes who also use it and recommend it. What I love about it is that in a single serving, you're getting 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food superfoods, and probiotics and adaptogens. It's like an insurance policy for your health. I don't need to take a ton of supplements if I've got my AG1. I love to use this by just adding it to a smoothie that I already create in the morning, but you can also just add it to water and it tastes great. It's pretty cheap and efficient. It's got over 7,000 five-star reviews, and it's a really good company. Athletic Greens donates money to the No Kids Hungry program. They donated over 1.2 million meals to kids in 2020, and they're climate neutral certified. So I like to do business with companies that are doing good and are sustainable and have a great product, and Athletic Greens is one of those. So it's time to reclaim your health, arm your immune system with that convenient daily nutrition. No need for a million different pills and supplements for your optimal health. To make it easy for you, Athletic Greens is going to give you free one-year supply of the immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/divine. That's athleticgreens.com/divine, D-I-V-I-N-E. Take ownership over your health with the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Coming up on the Mark Divine Show.
Finally, it is that you don't have these boundaries because it's mind that creates these boundaries and these divisions. And so it's also called no boundary consciousness, where I can look at you, Mark, and see you as me. There is no difference. You and I are both an aspect of this larger awareness that is manifested in this particular body with this particular conditioning. Fundamentally, the air we breathe unites us. You know, this whole cosmos unites us, and everything is simultaneous. There's no separation.
Hi, this is Mark Divine. I'm the host of the Mark Divine Show. Thanks for joining us today. On this show, I explore what it means to be fearless through the lens of the world's most inspirational, compassionate, and resilient leaders. My guests include notables from all walks of life, motivational scientists, nutritional experts, peace crusaders, and developmental coaches. Each episode, I distill the remarkable experience of my guests into actionable insights to help you create your most compassionate and courageous life ever. Today, I'm going to be talking about the importance of vertical development and contrast that with horizontal development, and also talk about polarities. All of this is about lifelong adult development and leadership development. My guest today is Beena Sharma, a good friend of mine who I admire greatly, who's dedicated to stimulating and foster enlightened, humanized, relevant, practical, and real-world vertical development, which has a huge significance for our future. Beena leads the Vertical Development Academy, which delivers the maturity assessment profile, the maturity profile assessment. Her mission is to catalyze human maturity on this planet, which sounds aligned with my mission. She's an expert in how leaders grow into greater maturity and complexity and how to facilitate the development and integration of the mature self, leading to more complex thinking, more complex systemic integration, greater depth, breadth, and also competitive performance. So Beena, thanks so much for joining us today. I mean, I'm excited. And you and I have known each other just for about a year, I think. And I'm very excited about the work you're doing and its similarity, or I say alignment, with what we're doing at our company, Unbeatable. Before we get into some of those details about vertical development, tell us a little bit about Beena. Where were you born and what were some of your childhood influences and some of the things that shaped you in this world?
Yeah, well, first, I want to say thank you for inviting me. And I'm very excited to meet you and get to know your work, and also for potentially collaborating with you, because we are serving the same larger purpose. I feel the largest purpose we can imagine for ourselves and for the world.
And the timing is so important. You know, I want to talk about your vision for the future, you know, as we get into this, but it couldn't be more of an urgent mission, in my opinion.
Yeah, about me, I was raised in India. I grew up in the south of India. In some ways, I was always an outsider. I grew up in the south, but my father was from the north. We would go to the north. I was seen as a South Indian. And I'm saying this because I think that was an important experience for me to learn what it means to stand on the outside and not be completely absorbed in the homogeneity of the culture that, you know, I was raised in. And I think that's a deep source of growth for me, you know, a reference point.
Can I pause? I'd like to drill into some of these things I'll try not to interrupt you, but I do want to press pause a few times here. I have an Indian fellow in my doctorate program. And of course, programs these days, diversity and inclusion and bias and race disparities and equality are like really, really brought to the surface. Whereas probably maybe 10 years ago, they weren't so much. And what was fascinating for me to learn from this Indian guy, Venkat, was just how much racial disparity and separatism exists in the Indian culture. Because, you know, I was thinking, well, that really only exists in America. Everyone else is kind of more squared away. But apparently that's not true, right?
Yeah.
So I thought it's fascinating. I think it's interesting for people to hear. This is a global issue, right? It's not something related to just Western culture.
No, I think it's related to the human mind.
Exactly.
It's related to our perspective taking. And in some ways, that's actually very relevant to our topic today, because our perspectives evolve as we grow. You know, early on, even if we had these allergies to others, you know, we were raised to not trust others. We were raised to trust only family. Blood is thicker than water. And as we get socialized and conditioned, we absorb all those, I would say, rules to keep ourselves safe. And there's value in belonging. You know, we are safer in numbers, etc. But as we develop and mature, we realize that's a very limited view and we separate ourselves from that. So this idea about disparities and seeing others as enemy is a very early stage idea, I would say. And many of us grow through that and pass that into recognizing that that's not actually true. And our circle of embrace expands. For some people, because of life circumstances, because lack of inner and outer resources, that movement doesn't happen. But I think it is it has the potential to grow in every human being.
I agree with you, and not to go deep into this right now, but just as kind of a harbinger of what's to come in our conversation, because it's very relevant at the global stage right now. When you see, you know, Russia, which is led by either a self-centric or certainly a group-centric, egoic, you know, ethnocentric leader like Putin, attacking Ukraine, who, you know, I believe is being led by a more world-centric individual in the younger Zelensky, it wreaks great harm when you have a structure. Structures we have in this bipolarized or multipolar geostrategic type structure that was built in the industrial age, you know, post-World War II, that allows undeveloped leaders to have control of nuclear weapons. I just want to pin that because it's something that I think has to change in order for us to survive as a species. And I want to come back to that because it's not an insignificant number of people in this world who are at that self-centric or group-centric. It's significant, right?
Yeah, I would say that it can be catastrophic when you have somebody who doesn't have a more mature perspective about inclusion, about seeing the whole world as one, and is more territorial. When that is compounded with power, and when that's compounded with, you know, weapons that can destroy the earth, it's a disastrous, catastrophic situation.
Right.
You know, since you've already introduced some terms, we'll come back to those later. But I would just say that it's a little more complex than identifying Putin as just at one stage. You know, we are all complex. He may have access to later stages, but it's a compounding of complex factors then that maybe evoke one way of holding what needs to be done or just holding the goal or the vision he has.
Right. It becomes like a center of gravity for certain types of acting in the world or being triggered or, you know, like you said, he might be a certain way as a father that's much more evolved. But on the global stage, you know, he's acting out of a very early stage of model, I would say.
Interestingly, I just heard a clip recently of an interview of him maybe 20 years ago, and he was asked by the interviewer, you know, what is his vision for his daughters? How does he want them to grow up? And he said, I want them to grow up as good Russians. So that actually comes from a particular worldview, a particular stage of development, which is the group-centric stage, is that there is a definition of who we are, who a good Russian is, who Russians are. And he wanted them to grow up as good Russians, not as world citizens. So you can already see there's that boundary that defines his identity, if you will.
Well, right. And then that's pretty narrow. And the Chinese CCP has that kind of a similar kind of energy around this narrow perspective of we are this way, and yet it's our right to impose this way on others or on the global order. you know, this is kind of what's leading to this conflict.
Yeah, it's horrendously complex in the political stage. It's just horrendously complex. There's so many factors. Yeah.
Right. I would love to, you know, this is something I'd love to come back to when we talk about vision for the future. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we can get to a place and time where there's a prerequisite to ascend to these leadership posts? And that prerequisite is that you have to be at a post-conventional, you know, construct-aware or even self-actualizing stage of development that is inclusive of all, but also inclusive of all perspectives.
Yeah, the level of perspective you can take is critical in critical positions of power and influence.
Right, and I think we're coming to a place where the global population will demand that as they start to understand its criticality. You know, back to Bina. Sorry for taking that little sideshow.
Yeah, no.
So your experiences in India helped you understand that it doesn't feel good to be an outsider when you're the outsider. How did that spur you growth?
Yeah, it gave me distance and it allowed me to choose who I wanted to be, not just be determined by what was expected of me. So that was a big step. And then early on, I started learning about thinking skills because my daughter was born and I wanted to take her to a school. And I wanted to find the best school. And I found that all the schools were just stuffing, you know, children with information. And they were not actually allowing the mind to be open. And I got really interested in how we develop children. So I studied Maria Montessori and Joseph Campbell and Rudolf Steiner and Jay Krishnamurti. Really got interested in education and then got interested in education of an adult. We started with holding myself as instrument. So I started, you know, learning and teaching thinking skills, how to improve the way I think and question and interpret and, you know, how can I be more creative? So I did that for a few years and realized that those were all skills related to thinking. Even with my learning and teaching, I had taken some poor decisions. So I realized that there was much more to taking good life decisions. So I got more interested in the interiority of emotions and our conditioning and context. So I started studying psychotherapy, but ended up working in an organization doing organizational development and leadership development. This thing about the cognitive and the emotional, that tension finally got integrated within me. And then I also realized through my work that I was teaching and training, but what I was really looking for was learning. How are people actually learning and applying? So I got interested in learning. I studied and started designing learning interventions in an organization. And then I realized just that was also not enough because the organization had to learn in order to meet its strategic vision and strategic direction. So then I got interested in learning in the context of strategic change. So I got trained in large-scale change management. So I did that for several years.
That's a challenging area, by the way. I understand, you know, most change initiatives fail.
Yes.
You know, so people are very resistant to change and they have kind of a immunity to change.
Yeah.
And I think that there's actually a book by that title by a famous change agent out of Harvard, I think.
That's Robert Keegan's work. Yes.
Keegan, yeah, Keegan.
So even that resistance to change can be interpreted as positive for the whole system because through that resistance, there's wisdom and the whole system can move and learn as well. In the last 20 years, I've been focusing more on deep individual development because changing a system, I felt, required me to understand myself and individuals deeper. And I was fascinated by integral theory. I came upon Ken Wilber's work. So he, as you know, has codified or understood, researched, investigated the last 10,000 years of human endeavor and seen these major patterns of how we understand our world and created a comprehensive theory of everything called integral theory. And among all the dimensions of integral theory, I was most interested in what is what we call vertical development, which is this expanding of our mindsets, the evolution of every human being as we grow and understand our world and we make meaning, we come into new ways of storying what we are experiencing. So I got most interested in that. And I was very fortunate to meet Dr. Suzanne Kogreuter, whose research at Harvard, you know, has been seminal, built on already 30 years of research by Jane Lovinger, who was another psychometrician. Suzanne built on Jane Lovinger's work and developed the theory and framework and the measurement of how human beings grow and mature until, I would say, 30, 40 years ago, when you just arrived, when you're an adult, you're 21 and you're an adult and that's it. But we now know, we even knew then, that our growth and learning continues to grow, continues to evolve over time. But now we have scientific measurement as well as a theory that is empirically based on that research that codifies what that means. So it's very exciting that we have that accessible today.
Yeah, I love that. I ran into Ken's work around 2000 when I was enrolled at USD in a leadership doctorate program. And it was fascinating because I saw the immediate value in the developmental stage model, which you just described, but also how it related to what he calls the four quadrants, or, you know, collapsing it to the big three. And that's what you just said about why change is difficult is related to that. Because if you just try to change the it structures, but you don't try to address the I and the we, you know, the individual interior of the individual and the team, then change efforts really tend to fail.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's all about the individuals executing the change within the structures, you know, that are implemented. So I thought that that was brilliant, but I remember USD literally firing one of the professors who wanted to bring integral theory into the program. And shortly thereafter, I got sent to Iraq and I had a lot of thought about that. And I decided to end my reign there at USD. And I was well into like 50 some odd credits into the program, but I just like, I don't think this, I'm aligned with this university. It was fascinating, you know. But Wilbur has had a big influence. We've had him on this show a while ago. This whole model, his whole model has really greatly influenced my work as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's why I love what you're doing, is bringing the depth of all levels of development and the integral model along with cutting edge technologies to address every dimension.
Right. So let's get into, so you met Susan Kirkgaarder's work, but then you actually started working with her.
Yeah.
And then you started a company called Vertical Development Academy, and she's now aligned with you to bring her assessment work, what they call a MAP, into your clients. So tell us about that kind of relationship and how that evolved and where it's going.
Yeah, it's been a blessing and a privilege, you know, to work with Suzanne. So I asked her to be my mentor and she agreed, which was amazing. And so we started working in 2005. So she trained me in the framework and teaching the framework. And I began to integrate everything that I had learned, because this is a comprehensive meta framework that can be used to interpret any school of thought, you know, any perspective. So my work, I had already been working with polarity thinking. We'll talk a little bit about that. I'd already been working with that lens, if you will. So having worked with Suzanne, I was able to integrate more explicitly how polarities show up in this framework of vertical development. I found it endlessly fascinating, just the work in the framework. And I think it was hugely impactful for my own growth and development. So I was more clearly able to see how I was growing, and that informed the work. And I realized that the assessment is this core scientific mirror that can tell me and can tell us, you know, where we are in our ability to make sense of the world, at what stage of development we are. And so I realized that in order to understand it even deeper, I would have to learn how to actually score the assessment. So I got trained by Suzanne in how to score the assessment. I see the assessment as it reveals the anatomy of development. You know, it just shows you how language reflects development, how we express our meaning making, how we express what we see in the world through language, and how that reveals what we are aware of, what we are not aware of, what are the hidden beliefs and assumptions that we hold. And then by challenging that, we can open our perspectives up. Now, life will challenge us. That's how we grow anyway. And we can be more aware of that developmental process with an understanding of this framework and the assessment. So I got trained as a scorer, and then I learned from her how to train other scorers. Then in 2013, Suzanne said, look, you know, now you can just do this on your own. You know, I see you as a peer. You can teach and you can deliver the assessments. I took 6 months to think about what I wanted to do. I knew that this work was going to be central in my life, but I was balking at the idea of starting an enterprise because I had this fear that I'll get sucked into it and then I won't have any time. I won't have any time for myself or my life. And that changed when one morning after 6 months, I just woke up, with these five words, this is mine to do. Mm. It just felt like I was doing it anyway. I could trust myself to keep the boundaries. So I went to Suzanne and told her I want to create this academy, the center where this work could grow. And we would train more coaches, certify them, make a network and really hold and anchor the integrity and the ethic of this work and maintain the scientific rigor. And so Suzanne, listened to me, didn't say anything. And in the end, she said, yeah, I'd like to be a part of that, which was the best thing, that I could have heard because we were better together. We are better together. And so Suzanne and I then started collaborating in this partnership, in this company. And she's been very intimately involved with my development, with the development of the work. And then in the last 3 years, she's more in her writing mode and a retirement mode. So in the last 3 years, I have taken on full leadership of the enterprise, if you will. She continues to be a research director, continues to be a guide. And it's very exciting to see the interest in this work. And personally, I feel that even my own understanding is deepening and I'm able to expand both the theory and the application in terms of the assessment as well as the coaching considerably because we are learning so much. We're learning so much about the framework. We're learning so much about how people are impacted by the assessment. We're learning so much about how individuals grow by, in the last 4 years, we've done 2,000 assessments, which means 2,000 debriefs. It's a privilege to get that kind of deep window into the interior of a person and begin to see the universal application as well.
Okay, we're going to take a short break here from the Mark Divine Show to hear a short message from one of our partners. This episode of the Mark Divine Show is also sponsored by Bioptimizers, P3OM. When I used to get tired or burned out in the middle of the day, I would just pound cold brew, hoping it would make a difference. But all that coffee did was help me send emails faster and make me aggro at folks who didn't drive when their light turned green. I didn't consider that taking probiotics would give me that energy boost. Not just any probiotic, but P3OM from Bioptimizers. It's a patented probiotic strain that increases mental clarity and focus and improves overall energy without the crash. Unlike coffee, it doesn't keep you up at night either. It improves your sleep and recovery so you can kick ass again every day. Energy isn't the only benefit that P3OM offers. It can enhance your weight loss and help you gain lean muscle mass. You can be the most energized person ever with this product. There's no reason to spend thousands of dollars at a health food store on other probiotics that may or may not do anything. P3OM is considered the Navy SEAL probiotic by researchers due to its ability to kill the bad bacteria. You can see a video of it breaking down food at p3om.com/divine. And you can get 10% off P3OM right now by going to p3om.com/divine. Type in the coupon code DIVINE10 at checkout. And if you order it and it's not everything that you hope for, then they'll give you all of your money back, no questions asked. Visit p3om.com/divine, D-I-V-I-N-E. Get a 10% discount with the coupon code DIVINE10. That's DIVINE10. So p3om/divine, use the code DIVINE10. Hoo-yah. And now back to the show. So before we get into what is vertical development and what are the, what's the stage model that Susan Kirkreuter, kind of evolved and that you were working with and probably will continue to evolve because it's a living model, right? It's not, just like I say with mine, it's not stuck in brick and mortar or else, it would outlive itself, right?
Yeah, I love
that. It's a living
that.
Model, so as consciousness evolves, so must our understanding of it and the language you use. So that kind of my first question. I was listening to Brené Brown's new book, and she literally just said the same thing, that language, the language we use will either limit us or, help us expand.
She
and
is,
I've said that,
yeah.
Just like you understand that people who get into the work of self-evolution, they have to radically examine and deconstruct the language that they used, mm-hmm. because language is how we make meaning. It's sense making. So new language can lead to new perspectives and new sense making.
Absolutely.
I think this is great. And I really want to come back to language again and talking about polarities, because I think that just the discussion alone can be psychoactive and people can be like, oh, wow, interesting, right? Polarities exist in our lives because we live in this duality world. And so to be able to be aware of them and understand the language of the range of polarities that exist, or the ranges that exist within polarities, can really help meaning making and problem solving and conflict resolution and those types of things. Well, why don't we start there before we get into vertical development itself? Because I know polarities are part of it, but how do language and polarities kind of fit together? And take us through, Jenny, the general philosophy of polarities. You were working with that before you started the stage development model.
Yeah, so polarities are basically tensions, you know, where we all face them. Polarities are interdependent values or strengths that we tend to navigate, struggle with, and sometimes we pick one over the other, thinking one is better than the other. And as we grow, we realize, well, it's not this or that, it's both. So we all know that. If you, I mean, just take work-life balance. There was no such thing 30, 40 years ago. But then as the workforce started over-focusing on work, then, you know, organizations began to see the downside of that. People were exhausted, there was burnout. And then it became a thing to say, hey, work is not everything. You also need to pay attention to your life. So work-life balance became an organizational imperative for more functional, integrated human beings. Now, it seems so obvious, but this is just the core. It's like inhaling and exhaling. You know, we have to inhale to live and breathe, and we breathe inhaling, and we have to exhale to live. To pick one or the other as better is like saying, oh, the inhalers are better than the exhalers. Or inhaling that. Is better than exhaling. There's no such thing. You need both to live. So there is a class of tensions that are actually polarities. There are many, many tensions that may be in opposition that may not actually be a polarity, but you pick one over the other and you're good to go. It solves the problem. But not all problems are problems that can be solved. Like this problem of inhaling and exhaling, which is better, we can solve that.
Right. It's not about solving it. It's just about kind of moving along.
It's about harmonizing, integrating, managing it, and doing both. And you have to do both over time. So this can show up in individuals. It can show up in organizations. So just for an example, it could be you and I are working in a team. And I like to plan ahead and make the plan and work the plan. And that's the way I feel I will be an effective leader. And you, on the other hand, may actually like to really wait to see what's actually happening before, you know, making a big plan. You're more relying on, let's adapt to what's emerging. Let's pay attention to what is real instead of thinking ahead, because we can think ahead and make all the plans we want. But if we don't pay attention to what is happening, the reality here, we may miss the bus.
Right.
So we have both different orientations. So I'm focusing on planning, thinking ahead, and you're focusing on adapting to what is emergent.
Right.
And with an either or mindset, we can see each other as a problem or problematic. Each other's approach is problematic. So you might say, well, Bina is all the time planning and thinking ahead, and she's forgetting what is actually happening. And before long, none of her plans are actually, you know, achieved or achievable, because she's just not paying attention to what is happening currently or adapting, however you want to say that. Whereas I am adaptive. I can be more successful as a leader by paying attention to the details, to the signals on the ground today, not what I can do, you know, 6 months later. Bina, on the other hand, will look at Mark and say, Mark is just not thinking ahead. He's just being reactive. He's just responding to what is now, and he's shifting and changing, and he's all over the place, and he's chaotic, and he doesn't.
How did you know me so well? My goodness.
And he doesn't, you know, he doesn't bring the structure that is needed. Otherwise, he's not going to be an effective leader.
Right.
So we see each other's pole, which is a polarity. So this is a polarity where one pole is planning and the other pole is, let's say, flowing, emergent, adapting, however you want to say
right,
it.
Right.
So when I privilege my pole, I see your pole in its negative. And when you focus on your pole saying that's the better way, then you see my pole in the negative. And so we are both the worst in some ways. We can't collaborate very well.
You know, this is fascinating to me because most people listening have been exposed to typologies like the Myers-Briggs or DISC. but I've never seen them taught in the context of polarities. And that would be extremely valuable to merge a typology assessment that says, okay, here's these different ways of being. And usually they're, you know, like five factors. They're either five or four different kind of major ways that people behave or their personality types are. But then, you know, so you say, okay, I am this way. Great. That's helpful. And Beam is that way. And so, you know, just understand. But to understand that these things can be seen in polarities and to have a team bring out the best of the team is to understand how these polarities work and how each typology might have a distinct polarity in another typology.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is, all typologies are resting on underlying polarities. It's just that some are called up and then they are fixed. What typologies don't teach you is how to manage polarities. They teach you how to work with that typology. So it can be a limiting framework. So you could do the MBTI, you can know that I'm an INTF and you are an ESTJ, and we can work with that. But when we're actually working, I don't see that you're emphasizing emergence, I'm emphasizing planning, this is a polarity. I can't see that because I'm only trained to see those four polarities in the MBTI, which have 16 versions, and some people will take it to 84. But it's still a constraining framework. It should be a liberating structure so that it allows you to see polarities, but it doesn't. So even if you look at the Enneagram, if you look at type 8, type 7, they all preference and privilege some poles.
Well, the other thing, since we're talking about these, and I'd love to get your perspective on this, is I've never seen them taught where the facilitator buys into the idea that the type will change as an individual evolves. What they usually will say is the type may change based upon the situation evolving. But when I look at, you know, who I am as a self-actualizer or becoming as a construct aware human, I'm very different. My type is very, very different. I am way more spontaneous and adaptable than I was when I was a CPA and a different type back in my 20s, where I was much more of a planner and a thinker because I was stuck in my head.
Yeah. So this is the other thing. As we mature, we are freer from our patterns and the way we define ourselves. So at early stages of development, we like to say, oh, I'm this type. I'm the thinking type. You're the feeling type. It's orienting. So it's actually helpful up to a point. But as we grow, we continue to define ourselves in more and more expansive ways. And that shifts. So we actually say that as you grow through maturity, you arrive at the style of no style. You're not bound by any. You can be anything because you realize that you're fixing yourself. And it was a story you said, and it was also a conditioning. So at later stages, we become aware of our conditioning and we loosen our own conditioning systematically, progressively, until we are free of that. We can be free of that. Now, that's a tall order, but it's the process.
It's the process. And that's what we mean by when you become construct aware, you get to deconstruct the conditioning and the personality typologies and all that, and then reconstruct, like you said, whatever is necessary for you to thrive in a situation or in the life that you want to live.
Yeah, that's why I don't like to teach typologies. And I support anybody who learns the typology. And I say, just add this layer. See the typology as a certain set of polarities and understand how polarities work. Understand how you would name a polarity. How would you identify it? How would you see your own preferences? And how will you include what you exclude because you don't think that that's a good way of being a leader? So how can I, Beena, include your adaptability? How can I include your being emergent along with planning so that I am way better than if I were to just plan and then reject this other part? So what polarities do is helps us see what we exclude. It helps us see what we privilege. And then it helps us be more powerful because integration is powerful.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there who love the idea of being growth mindset because they want to be included in that idea. But then they fully believe that I am an ENFJ or I am a, you know, dominant driver in the DISC profile. And so what they're really saying is I'm a fixed mindset person
exactly.
who believes they're a growth mindset, but they're not. You're not growth in all that areas.
And I might make a distinction between fixed mindset and fixing identity.
Yes. Okay, please. Yeah, I think you're right. So built upon this idea that polarities can help us open up to be more inclusive and growing and deconstructing and reconstructing our worldview and our identities and et cetera, That leads us to this idea of vertical development versus horizontal development. And most of training, leadership development in the past has been horizontal, which is accrual of new skills that help you be more effective or efficient, you know, like communication strategies, strategic planning, values mapping, etc. And we've all done that. Every listener has been through that. It didn't change who you were as a person. So how would you describe vertical development in opposition to what, you know, the traditional horizontal development looks like?
Yeah. And so I want to even start by noticing that this is a polarity, vertical and horizontal.
True that.
Is a polarity, right?
Well, it's almost like an intersection. It's not so much of a polarity, but I guess you could say.
Well, the thing is, you need both. Just doing horizontal development is not enough. So what is horizontal development like? You know, more knowledge, more information, more skills, more credentials, more certificates. And you know more and more and more, but it doesn't fundamentally change any assumptions you have about yourself. It doesn't fundamentally change any beliefs you have about how the world works. Vertical development, on the other hand, involves recognizing that you have certain beliefs and you're invested and identified by certain assumptions. And then these get challenged over time because of life experiences. And you realized, oh, heck, I thought I had it, but I was all wrong. So let's say you start a new partnership, you hire somebody. You have an idea about how they're going to work. You're trusting, you see their skill set, and you hire them. And then 3 months later, it's not working. So what is this telling you? So now you begin to question, what did I miss? What did I not see? What does this person bring? Does he or she fit into my context? Is our visions aligned? You begin to question all these assumptions. And that's huge learning. That's very different from horizontal development. You learn about your own assumptions and then you are the wiser. So next time when you're hiring somebody, now you do a deeper investigation. You have a more qualified process. You don't say, yeah, I'm going to hire you, pay you this much. Then now you'll say, well, let's test this for 6 months and see how it's going. That's a big leap in development because now you recognize that you can't predict everything, you don't know, you can't see everything, and you want to wait to see how it's actually going to work out. A more personal example would be, all of us have been in relationships, you get into a relationship, you love this other person, you have an imagination of who you are in this relationship, you get married, you have an idea about who you're going to be as a husband, as a wife, or what marriage is. And then 10 years later, your 10th anniversary, you catch yourself reflecting, oh my God, now I had no clue 10 years ago. Now I understand what marriage is all about because now there's reality. Your real experience has shown you that you had some ideas and ideals about marriage, but reality is actually different. So in some ways, we can say that maturity or this vertical development is coming closer and closer to what actually is and tests our ideas about what we think is true and what actually is not true. It sounds a little abstract, but I think that's with those examples, it helps you see that we have some idea that gets challenged and we come up with a new idea. Oh, that's not marriage. This is what marriage is like. You're living in that marriage in a new way with new perspectives. The things that bothered you 10 years ago don't bother you anymore. That is vertical development.
That makes a lot of sense to me, but to help frame it even further, based upon Kurt Greuter's work and Ken Wilber and Claire de Graves and Lovinger, they've shown that there's kind of these center of gravities that stabilize or that you can kind of point to in this developmental or maturation process. And so we call those developmental stages.
Yeah.
And that's very helpful because it creates a map. And when you're doing developmental work, it's very helpful to have a map. So you kind of know if you veer off the terrain, you know what I mean? If you're going sideways or you're going backwards,
yeah.
You can be like, oh, you know, maybe I need to do something different, or there's something holding me back. I'm doing good in these areas, but let's say, like you're to your point, my relationship is really stuck. Then the map can really help us. So let's talk about the most, you know, kind of like the three most dominant stages, which are the, you know, I would say egoic and ethnocentric and world-centric. Those are Wilber's terms, or pre-conventional, conventional, post-conventional. Let's characterize those three, and then as we have time, maybe get into some of the more nuances that exist within those three.
Yeah. So when you mention stages, so vertical development involves people growing through these stages of development that are recognizable that can actually also be assessed. So if you're okay, I can actually quickly go through the stages instead of the bands because that brings greater clarity. So the first stage of development is when we are centered on the self, which is called self-centric. all we have capacity for is surviving and protecting ourselves. That is the earliest stage of development where we are not yet even socialized. We have no concept of the impact on the other person. So if somebody needs something, they go steal it. I don't care whether it's yours or it's not supposed to be mine. I'll just take what I want because I need it, because my need is immediate and this involves me surviving. There's no concept of rules or norms, and there's no concept of impact on the other person. And at such a stage, if you give me any feedback, hey, you're not supposed to steal, I see that as an attack and I will only retaliate. At the next stage of development, for the first time, I realize that I can't just steal something because I want it. You know, there are rules, there are norms. And I realize that how long am I going to just be running and trying to survive on my own? I actually want to be part of society. I want to be included because there are benefits and I'll be liked and I can be protected by my group, whoever that group is, my faith, my country, my race, whatever that is. So that's the next stage, is the group-centric stage, when we are socialized into a group identity. And when you give me feedback at that stage, I see that as I get embarrassed because I want approval, I want to be included, and I feel shame if you give me feedback. I'm relating this also to, since you're talking about coaching and leadership, I'll relate it to what happens in the context of feedback. So that's the group-centric stage when, you know, the world is divided into us and them. And at that group-centric stage, if you sort of attack my group, you attack me. There's no difference. So there's really no separate identity. These stages of development are also stages of identity in a certain way, how we see ourselves.
Oh, and they can exist at a cultural level as well.
Yes, yeah. The focus, my study has been only at the individual level. So I'm not that, I mean, I can see how it applies, how the individual identity then manifests and how a culture is created and where the central gravity of a culture might be. I just haven't, I mean, it's more complex. So this is something that I'm sort of clearer about because of the research. So at the next stage, for the first time, I have the sense of a separate self. It's called the birth of the psychological self. Now my identity comes not from my group, from what I do. So whatever I do, I can be, if I'm a carpenter or a doctor or a lawyer, I want to do it better, because the better I am as that professional or as that doer, the more sense of self I have, the better I feel about myself. So that stage is called skill-centric. So at this stage, if you give me feedback, if you criticize like my work, you're criticizing me. There's no separation between what I do, my role, my action, my craft. There's no separation between that. So that's the skill-centric stage. Then the next stage, which is the highest in the band that we call conventional, is the self-determining stage, which is a huge leap. Here now I'm no longer defined by what I do, but my choices. Who am I independently? What do I think? What do I want? How do I want to reinvent myself? What do I want to achieve? How can I change the world? So there's a much greater objectivity. There's more reliance on a scientific sort of an approach. And I apply that to myself also. I can be objective with myself. So at this stage, if you give me some feedback or criticism, for the first time, I can actually listen, observe myself and say, you know what, you're right. I could have done that differently. That is a huge level of maturity. And I would say what, 50% of the general population isn't there. But this is the center of gravity of what society supports, the self-determining stage. We all, you know, those of us who are educated.
Entrepreneurs, educated individuals.
Educated people, we have inner and outer resources. We want to grow, we want to learn, we want to change. We see problems and we want to do the best. So we do that.
Okay, we're going to take a short break here from the Mark Divine Show to hear a short message from one of our partners. This episode of the Mark Divine Show is also brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, you're listening to this, probably also driving, you're cleaning, you're working out, maybe grocery shopping. But if you're not in some moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing right now too. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's super easy and it could save you money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive Insurance save on average over $700 and qualify for an average of 7 discounts, such as discounts for having multiple vehicles, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive is with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. So go ahead and multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com while you're listening and join over the 27 million drivers who trust Progressive for their insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates national annual average insurance savings by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2020 and May 21. Potential savings will vary. Discounts are not available in all states or situations. Mark Devine Show is also brought to you by 10,000, my favorite training apparel company. Tell you what you wear when you train does make a difference. Not only should you feel comfortable, have tons of mobility, but you should look good. You shouldn't look like a fuddy-duddy or like your shorts are too tight or crazy what I see out there. But 10,000 has unbelievably good-looking, high-quality, functional gear. I've been wearing their 7-inch interval short and also their versatile shirt. Interval short is their most popular, perfect for gym days, spinning, short runs, high-intensity or functional outdoor workouts. They've got tons of features. Silver ion for odor protection, no bounce pockets. They're breathable, lightweight shell fabric. They've got a phone pocket, an optional liner. They're super comfortable and extremely functional. And their versatile shirt is the perfect workout shirt, I think. It's lightweight, it's breathable, durable, and it looks great. These guys deliver, and they believe in being better than yesterday with a stoic dedication to continuous improvement. They've got a team of over 200 athletes and special operators who test their shorts and their shirts to ensure perfect design, fit, trim, and durability. They offer free shipping, free returns, and a lifetime guarantee. So check out 10,000. They're offering you 15% off your purchase. If you go to 10,000.cc, note that's .cc/divine. Go there to receive 50% off your purchase. That's 10,000.cc/divine. And now back to the show. So far, you've described what I understand is to be the pre and the,
conventional.
Pre-conventional and conventional, which is the majority of the global population.
Yes, about 75% of the general population all fall within these four stages.
Okay.
So the next stage is the entry into what is called the post-conventional realm. And this is where, for the first time, I realized that I can question what I think and believe. Like in the previous stage, I am very clear about what I want, what I choose, my criteria. And if you have a different opinion, I'm willing to listen. I can be objective. But in my mind, I'm going to do what I feel is right. We can agree to disagree, but I don't actually see the truth in your perspective.
But I'm not going to demonize you for your perspective.
Yeah, we can agree. I can be logical about it. I can say that's your view, and I'll continue to do what I want to do. I'm not really impacted by that. I want to change things, but I am not changed by things as much. So the first post-conventional level, for the first time, I realized that who I am, what I choose, what I believe is a result of my conditioning, you know, because I was raised this way. I was in India. These were my parents. I was in the North and the South. I realized that this is my makeup and I was conditioned by my context. And for the first time, I can look at you and realize that you hold your views because you were conditioned by your context. You grew up in America. You did yoga, you were in the Navy SEALs, and this is why you have this sort of worldview. So who am I to say that I am right and you are wrong? We are both right. You also bring truth. I also bring truth, and everybody brings truth. So now there are multiple perspectives that I recognize the truth of. So that is a huge leap in development, which is at least necessary for us to understand different perspectives. At that stage, if you give me any feedback, I actually welcome it because you're showing me things I don't know about myself. And that's welcome. I realize there are parts of me I don't know. There are hidden parts of me that I don't know because I'm just discovering them. And so when you give me feedback, I welcome it. At the next stage, which is the self-actualizing stage, I'm realizing now that yes, all views are equal because everybody's truth is a truth, but there are some principles. There are some absolutes. There are some truths are higher truths. So now for the first time, I'm able to hold that position, even if it means excluding some truths in the context of a higher truth, in the context of the larger system, for the greater good, the idea of the greater good. I can take some decisions. So that is also an integrative mindset, if you will, where you can see multiple perspectives and you can integrate them for the good of the larger system. And that's, again, another big milestone in development. And at that stage, if you give me feedback, I not only welcome it, I will actually go invite feedback because I realize that feedback is necessary between the individual and the environment. Conflict is a part of a viable system. So I will actually invite feedback. Sometimes I may not even invite feedback, but the way I interpret the situations around me, that is feedback to me about who I am, about what, how I'm seeing the situation. So that's the self-actualizing stage. And, you know, between, as I already said, the post-conventional stages, there are about just 20 to 25% of the general population will be in the last four stages. And these first two stages of the post-conventional, you know, you might have about 18 to 20%. The next stage is a big milestone, which is called the construct aware. And you have about 5 to 6% at that stage. At the construct aware stage, after having discovered these higher principles and the deep desire to know one's own depth and one's own psyche, one's own blind spots, one begins to realize that these higher principles are also constructs. They're ideas. They're just stories that we tell. So then you come into this understanding that through language, we're making stories about everything and all stories are constructed. And I have a story about myself and that's also constructed. Myself is also constructed, which is like literally where in the earlier stage, you have the rug that is seems to have been pulled out from under your feet because your fundamental assumptions are challenged. At this stage, it's like, you know, the earth is gone from under you. It's like
right.
There's really nothing to hold on to. It is disorienting. It can cause despair. And the freedom from the mind is a huge leap in consciousness.
This is like in a spiritual practice, the dark night of the soul kind of happens in this construct aware phase.
Yeah, I would say in some fashion that the dark night of the soul happens in each of these, you know, these
true that.
Major
yeah.
transitions.
That's a great perspective. Right. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I become aware of my mind. I'm standing outside my mind. I recognize that the mind has all these habits and I am identified with the mind. And then there's this big realization that until now, I always thought that my awareness arises in my mind because I'm identified by my mind. And at this stage, at the construct aware stage, I realize it's the mind that is arising in my awareness. My awareness is much bigger and I can watch my mind function, which then automatically sort of gets us to the last stage, which is the unitive stage, where finally it is that you don't have these boundaries because it's mind that creates these boundaries and these divisions. And so it's also called no boundary consciousness, where I can look at you, Mark, and see you as me. There is no difference. You and I are both an aspect of this larger awareness that is manifested in this particular body with this particular conditioning. Fundamentally, the air we breathe unites us. You know, this whole cosmos unites us and everything is simultaneous. There's no separation. So there's so many things one could say about this, but what I want to call out is the unitive stage describes in psychological development what the wisdom traditions describe.
I was just going to say that. That's the beauty of this, right? It's traditionally been the realm of the Eastern spiritual and wisdom traditions to talk about unitive consciousness. And now we have a model that can map it for psycho-emotional development to go beyond the psycho-emotional stage of development, which is fascinating. And it's very valuable.
And I feel what this model also teaches us is that there is a systematic progression of expanding perspectives that if we can commit to and we stay with this lens, continue to absorb us, it should get us there because it's a systematic deconstruction that happens through learning and growth. And life evolves us. But what happens, because we talked a little bit about the spiritual traditions, can you imagine a spiritual tradition that has these insights but is teaching somebody at the group-centric stage that this is what it means to be free of the mind, where they don't have the capacity to even see their mind. They don't even have the capacity to separate from the mind. So it's not that helpful in some situations where the seeker doesn't yet have the capacity to absorb what the spiritual traditions are teaching us. And therefore, I feel that this ego development process, this vertical development process is preparing us, you know, to better able to absorb. And I mentioned the word ego, so I want to be very clear about that, because this model of vertical development is based on ego development theory. And ego is a very big word. You know, we use it loosely. We complain about others having egos. We talk about I don't have an ego, or I check my ego out at the door.
I prefer the term identity or personality.
Right. Though, because the theory is based in the concept of the ego, I want to describe what it means in this theory. And what it means is that the ego is just that part of ourselves that is trying to explain what is happening, and then it tells a story. So it's that meaning-making part of ourselves. And then that takes away the problem of the connotations of the word ego that are very loose, that come from popular psychology and even from spirituality. You know, you have to kill the ego. In this framework, you can't kill the ego. It's the ego that's evolving and trying to make sense and is making more and more expanded sense of self until it dissolves because it doesn't have that boundary. So that's an important piece, I feel, conceptually to keep in mind.
I think, going back to language, I think the more evolved an individual becomes, the more their language becomes much looser, much simpler, much more use of silence, you know, to contrast the sound. Until ultimately at the unitive stage, you hear language like there's no words that can really describe this. And that kind of lines up with the spiritual tradition. It's like everything that's here is a description, is a construct of the mind. It's not the reality of pure awareness or pure consciousness or God or whatever you want to call that. It's just a description or a pointer to that. And my description is as equally valid as your description as long as we're at the same stage.
Exactly. And ultimately that reality is mysterious and unknowable.
And even that's a descriptor.
Yeah.
I love it. I wish we had more time. Maybe we'll have to go do this again sometime and talk more about some of the development. You know, how do we actually, you know, develop some of these stages or move beyond a stage and understand where we're at? And I know that's really the work of the assessment. But I think, you know, just talking about it can also be helpful, right?
Yeah, it's also the work of coaching. So if you are familiar with the stages, then you don't, if you really explore this and begin to observe yourself as instrument, then even without the assessment, you can begin to work with yourself. You can facilitate your own development.
You become your own self-coach, and I think that's very powerful.
Absolutely. And you can coach other people as well.
We're teaching coaching now as one of the most valuable leadership skills, not just for coaching your team, but for coaching yourself.
Yeah.
Very cool. There's so much more we could talk about, but we probably should pin it there.
No, this is a pleasure, Mark.
It's been great. I love talking to you, Bina. I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I think that, you know, you are on the leading edge of some very important work. So keep it up. Where can people learn more about your work and the Vertical Development Academy, and if they want to take the maturity assessment, those types of things?
Our website is verticaldevelopment.com. So you can just write to me, Bina@verticaldevelopment.com. You can take the assessment. We have some resources on our website. And I think through our partnership, Mark, you know, people who are following your work and even coaches you're working with, through our collaboration, you can access our work. So more on that to come as we develop.
Yeah, more on that to come. So we're going to explore that and how, right. I think there's a perfect synergy between what we're doing and, well, we're getting to the point where assessing an individual's center of gravity and helping them with a map for growth. And then, you know, what our work is what I mentioned earlier, our work is basically an integrated development model of the five mountains that can really help accelerate growth. And I know that's an assertion that Wilbur makes and even I make, and I want to validate it someday, that becoming psycho-aware and doing coaching, but actually becoming a developmental machine and then having an organization, which is the whole DDO concept of Keegan's, deliberately development organization, where when you go to work, you're actually developing yourself. It can greatly accelerate your journey toward higher stages of awareness.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And the one thing I would add, that if we look at that as a polarity, then we would also have the other piece, is that the forces of life are conspiring with us to grow. It's not just us doing what we're doing.
True that, yeah.
You know, we are not just the doers. And
yeah, no, that's a good point. Nisargadatta, did I say that?
Yes.
Nisargadatta, yes. Maharaj talks about how even the striving is an obstacle.
Yes.
Right? And so ultimately, awareness is seeking itself. And that's what my beloved Dzogchen teacher just passed away, Dr. Dan Brown from Harvard, who was one who interpreted or translated a lot of the Tibetan texts and brought them around the great pointing, the pointing out way.
Yeah, just
a beautiful tradition. He passed away just last week. But anyways, he used to say that awareness is seeking itself through itself.
Yeah.
And ultimately, another thing that I read from Maharaj, which I, you know, thank you, by the way, for referring the book to me. It's a brilliant book. I am that. But mind is centered in the body. Consciousness is centered in the mind. And most people believe in the West, you know, back to that conventionality, that the mind essentially is created by the complexity and the construct of the brain, and there's nothing beyond that because it can't be measured today with today's technology. But the spiritual traditions say, no, there is something beyond that. It's just pure awareness. And it exists independent of mind, but mind can find it. And once it finds it, and then you let go of the structures of the mind, it doesn't turn you into a zombie. It actually allows you to have that spontaneity of pure awareness. And that's what I'm trying to teach in exponential mindset. The speed of pure awareness is infinite fast versus the speed of thinking with your brain is like moving like a snail in comparison.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I might even say it's not even that you need your mind to find that awareness, because that we are that awareness. You know, we are a manifestation of that largest reality.
True, but without the mind and body, you'd be experiencing it in a different way.
Of course, you're the vehicle, right? Yeah,
right, you're the vehicle absolutely. In this realm. Fascinating stuff, Bina. Wow, I want to come back. I want to talk more about that unitive stage when we come back, because I think a lot of people are intrigued with it. They don't know how to get there. You know, it's the 1-3%. And they all use different language. And so I kind of want to democratize that idea of enlightenment and let people know that, hey, this is your birthright. If you want it,
it's there for you. I could not agree more. Thank you for saying that.
Right. And when we have, you know, a center of gravity of people or a tipping point of individuals who are at that unitive or even construct aware stage, probably more construct aware to be fair, then suddenly the earth will just radically change, just because you're going to have millions of people acting and leading with that inclusiveness, which includes Mother Earth and our actions. And you were starting to see it at the leading edge of social entrepreneurism and some of our younger leaders who are naturally, it seems like they, for whatever reason, have come in with this kind of higher stage of awareness.
Yeah, I am so inspired by that. Yeah, let's join forces.
I agree. It's important work. So thank you for doing what you're doing and for this a very interesting and educational episode of The Mark Divine Show. You rock.
Thank you for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, thanks, Bina. All right, take care. We'll talk soon. Well, that was an incredible episode with Bina Sharma, founder of the Vertical Development Academy and an expert on adult maturity development, adult leadership, or leadership development in the stage model of consciousness. We had an incredible discussion. Bina's work is very, very aligned with what we do at my company, Unbeatable, which leverages vertical development and integral theory, as well as stage development theory from transpersonal psychology and experts like Susan Kirkreuter, Claire de Graves, Jane Lovinger, Ken Wilber, and more. We talk about polarities and how language affects our reality and how language can limit or expand us. We talk about the difference between horizontal development and vertical development, how they're both important, but how you can get stuck with horizontal development alone, which includes most of leadership development for the past 50 years or so, gaining new skills in communication, new strategy, values alignment, those types of things. Don't change who you are as a human being. They just give you better capacity where you're at, whereas vertical development changes who you are and how you see the world. Show notes and transcripts are up on our website, markdivine.com. Video will be on our YouTube channel at markdivine.com/YouTube. You can find us on Twitter at markdivine and at realmarkdivine on Instagram and Facebook. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Plug for our newsletter, Divine Inspiration, which quickly disseminates my most top-of-mind information, news, habits, products, books I'm reading, etc., to help you lead with more compassion and courage. Exclusive content just for subscribers comes out every week. I post it on my LinkedIn page, but also, if you want to subscribe and get other information and stay up to date with what's going on in my life, go to markdivine.com to subscribe. I'd like to express some great gratitude to my team, Jason Sanderson, Jeff Haskell, Jeff Torres, Melinda Hershey, and Amy Jerkowitz, who helped produce this incredible podcast and bring guests to you like Bina every week. If you like the show, then please consider reviewing it and rating it wherever you listen, particularly Apple. It helps us with our credibility, helps other people find the show, and it'll help us grow. World is changing fast. We seem divided and in conflict because we are, and this episode will help you understand why. But it's up to us individually and then as a group to be the change you want to see in the world. It's very crucial to start with ourselves, to develop compassion, courage, and inclusiveness internally, and then to live that through our language and through our actions. So it's up to us to help you, and then you to help yourself, and then you to help your teams and your families to evolve these qualities so that we can be the change we want to see in the world. I appreciate you very much for being on this journey with us. It's very important. Our mission is 100 million world-centric leaders exhibiting this inclusive care and compassion in the world. And when we get there, hopefully soon, the world will be a better place. Till next time, Divine out.
Hey, this is Adam Carolla. Let me tell you about my podcast. We do it every single day, so you can subscribe and there'll always be a fresh one waiting for you. It's about 2 hours of topical topics and news and guests and comedians and, of course, my own vitriolic take on just about everything that's going on in the world. Plus, we get a lot of really interesting, notable people who come in. We'll get politicians, we'll get tastemakers, we'll get stand-ups, we'll get authors, we'll get pundits, we'll get, I think about covers it all, celebrities as well. And we'll do some really interesting interviews with them. You can get The Adam Carolla Show wherever you download your podcasts.